Yes, it's time.
Says 10:31.
Oh, okay. Well, good morning. My name is Pat Morrell, and I've been a member here for about a year and a half, and I'd like to welcome you all to church this morning. In the pulpit this morning, we have Don Allen, and you are invited to stay following worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in the fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you are a newcomer this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that are found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or hand it to an usher. If you do that, we will send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know all about the programs and activities here at the church. If you would like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall. There are pamphlets, newsletter, and lots of information that you're welcome to take home. Now I would invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones that you don't know.
Doing great so far.
How long do I have?
It's getting back to the end.
Now they're starting to sit down. Now, do I read the announcements? I just draw their attentions to them.
Just draw their attention.
Okay. All right. Now, I would like to draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. We hope you'll keep these things in mind as you plan your upcoming week. And now, what I would like to do is invite anyone to come to the microphone and briefly share any joys, milestones, or concerns that you have bring with you with church this morning.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Tade. If you don't remember, I haven't been here this summer. I'm glad to be back, though. We're teaching RE. We'll be singing the children out today, and we're having a powwow just outside, but we'll try to keep it to a low roar. We're covering Native American spiritual tradition, so we're really excited about it. And Lily will be teaching us some dances, so the kids can perform a little bit for us during coffee hour if they so choose. Looking forward to it.
I'm Alex Heft. My joy is I just got back from a week in Beloit, Wisconsin at a leadership school. They have a youth program they've done for 2 years now, so it was really fun.
I'm Audrey Wiseman. You know Dicey Madsen. She is moving. She's moving to, is she here today? Dicey, do you want to come make this announcement?
I'm her daughter.
Oh, are you? Oh, let's see. Okay. Yeah, I was very concerned because she's moving and I wanted this announcement to be about the auction. Yes, yes. Well, I do.
After many years of illustrating my husband's books, because I am moving, I need to make a lot of changes. One of them is to sell all the originals from the books. And so we're having an auction at this museum, the Alton Museum of History and Art, Tuesday night. You can look at them from quarter to five, and the auction will be from 5 to 7. And there are a few other things too. I've been a member of the Artists Guild over in St. Louis for a long time, and so there are a few other things as well besides the illustrations. A lot of artwork.
My daughter.
And I'm going to add, I'm her daughter. The next day after the auction on Wednesday, she is going to go in for some minor surgery, so keep her in your prayers for that too. Okay. Thank you.
All right, we have a joy that I wanted to point out is that Ken Heft will be doing special singing twice during the service. The prelude begins our worship service as Johnny Tade lights our chalice. Worship today is by Barbara J. Peskin, 417, if you want to follow along. For the beauty of the earth, the spinning blue-green ball, yes. Gaia, mother of everything, we walk gently across your back to come together again in this place, to remember how we can live, to remember who we are, to create how we will be. Gaia, our home, the lap in which we live, welcome us. Now I'd like you to stand to sing hymn page 122, sound over our number 122, sound over all waters. Responsive reading is number 586. The idea of democracy. As labor is the common burden of our race, so the effort of some to shift their share of burden onto the shoulders of others is the great durable curse of the race. This expresses my idea of democracy. Whatever differs from this to the extent of the difference is no democracy.
Our reliance is on our love for liberty. Our defense is in the spirit which prizes liberty as heritage to all people in all lands everywhere.
Destroy this spirit, and we have planted the seeds of despotism at our own doors. Why should there not be a patient confidence in the ultimate justice of the people? Is there any better or equal hope in the world?
Let us have faith that right makes might, and in that faith, let us in the end dare to do our duty as we understand it.
Words of Abraham Lincoln. Seated. Our community outreach offering today goes to the Alton NAACP. Give generously as you can. If you want your money to be your pledge, please note that on your check. Otherwise, you may wish to mark it outreach offering for your own records. Thank you. Now we would like to sing out the children.
This morning we have one reading, and Mary Johnson is going to introduce it.
Remarks of the President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, on the death of Adlai Ewing Stevenson. The White House, July 14, 1965. The President's remarks. The flame which illuminated the dreams and expectations of an entire world is now extinguished. Adlai Stevenson of Illinois is dead. I am sending a delegation of distinguished Americans, headed by Vice President Humphrey, to London to bring back his body to America on the airplane of the President of the United States. His great hero, Abraham Lincoln, said at the beginning of his political career, "I have no other ambition so great as that of being truly esteemed of my fellow men by rendering myself worthy of their esteem." And although his disappointments were many, in this, like Lincoln, he was vindicated. Like Lincoln, he was rooted in America's heartland, yet his voice reached across every boundary of nation and race and class. Like Lincoln, he was a great emancipator. It was his gift to help emancipate men from narrowness of mind and the shackledness which selfishness and ignorance place upon the human adventure. Like Lincoln, he will be remembered more for what he stood for than for the offices he held, more for the ideals he embodied than the positions in which he served. For history honors men more for what they were than who they were. And by this standard, Adlai Stevenson holds a permanent place on that tiny roster of those who will be remembered as long as mankind is strong enough to honor greatness. It seems such a short time ago that out of Illinois came that thoughtful eloquence summoning an entire nation back from its dangerous drift toward contentment and complacency. For an entire generation of Americans, he imparted a nobility to public life and the grandeur to American purpose, which has already reshaped the life of the nation and which will endure for many generations. One by one, he sounded the great themes of our time, peace and justice and the well-being of humanity. And many men will labor for many years toward the vision and the high purpose which was the generous outpouring of this great man's heart and skills. He was an American, and he served America well. But what he saw, and what he spoke, and what he worked for is the shared desire of all humanity. He believed in us perhaps more than we deserved, and so we came to believe in ourselves much more than we had. And if we persevere, then on the foundation of that faith, we can build the wondrous works of peace and of justice among all of the nations. He will not see that day, but it will be his day still. So let us therefore, adversary and friend alike, pause for a moment and weep for one who was a friend and who was a guide for all mankind.
Thank you, Mary. For our credit and meditation this morning, I'd like to share some words of the Indian poet Rabindranath Tagore called The Stream of Life, followed by a moment of meditation. The same stream of life that runs through my veins night and day runs through the world and dances in rhythmic measures. It is the same life that shoots in joy through the dust of the earth in numberless blades of grass and breaks into tumultuous waves of leaves and flowers. It is the same life that is rocked in the ocean cradle of birth and death, in ebb and in flow. I feel my limbs are made glorious by the touch of this world of life, and my pride is from the life throb of ages dancing in my blood this moment. Amen. Let's remain seated and sing hymn number 207, Earth Was Given as a Garden. Adlai Stevenson introduced me to Unitarianism, indirectly, of course, since I never met the gentleman. I've told this story before, some of you probably have heard it, but I was living and working in Bloomington, Illinois, at the time of his death in 1965. The hearse carrying Stevenson's body led a procession down Towanda Avenue, turned west on Emerson Street, past the residence of his sister, Buffy Ives, and turned into the church, the Unitarian Church, just down the street. Stevenson was a member of the Bloomington Normal Unitarian Church and had spoken from the pulpit there several times. Both Towanda and Emerson were lined with people there to pay their respects to their former governor. And in the procession rode President Lyndon Johnson, his wife Lady Bird, Vice President Hubert Humphrey and his wife, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, Illinois Senator Everett Dirksen, along with many other members of Congress, the Supreme Court, governors, and federal officials. I was 20-something at the time and was in awe of all the notable people that were passing by. I was standing along the street with hundreds of others watching the procession. Some of them were waving at us, and they were there to pay their respects to the statesman, as we all were too. I made it a point after witnessing that spectacle to learn more about Unitarianism and what drew such people as Stevenson, and eventually becoming a member myself there at the same church in 1979. So who is this man who's brought some of the most powerful men in the world together to mourn his passing? Adlai Ewing Stevenson II, governor of Illinois, from 1949 to 1953, Democratic candidate for president in 1952 and 56, and United States ambassador to the United Nations from 1961 to 65, was born in Los Angeles, California on February 5, 1960, the son of Louis G. Stevenson, himself an Illinois Secretary of State from 1914 to 1917, and Helen Davis Stevenson. He grew up in Bloomington, Illinois, where his ancestors had been influential in local and national politics since the 19th century. Jesse Fell, his maternal great-grandfather, a prominent Republican and early Lincoln supporter, founded the Daily Pantograph, a Bloomington newspaper, as well as being instrumental in the founding of Illinois State Normal University, later Illinois State. His paternal grandfather, the first Adlai Stevenson, served as Grover Cleveland's vice president during his second term. I'm indebted to the Reverend David Robbins, by the way, minister of the Bloomington Normal UU Church, for the use of his published collection of Stevenson memorabilia, and to Herbert Vedder's published collection of notable American Unitarians, in which is found Adlai E. Stevenson, A Voice of Conscience, 1900-1965. Stevenson graduated from Princeton University, where he had served as managing editor of the Daily Princetonian. He attended Harvard University Law School, but then returned to Bloomington in 1924 and became assistant managing editor of the Daily Pantograph. While working there, he re-entered law school at Northwestern University and in 1926 graduated and passed the Illinois State Bar exam. In 1928, he married Ellen Borden, a wealthy Chicago socialite, and they had three sons, Adlai E. Stevenson III in 1930, Borden Stevenson in 1932, and John Fell Stevenson in 1936. The couple then divorced in 1949. Stevenson began his government service in the early 30s, serving in legal capacities for a number of agencies in Washington, D.C., but then returned to Chicago in 1935, where he practiced law and became involved in civic activities. The Stevensons purchased a 70-acre plot on the Des Plaines River near Libertyville and built a home. They remained in the family home throughout his career. In 1940, Stevenson was appointed Special Assistant to the Secretary of the Navy, and in 1945, Special Assistant to the Secretary of State, and later that year went to London as Deputy United States Delegate to the Preparatory Commission of the United Nations Organization. Can you see that on his name tag, all that title? Then in 1947, he was asked to consider entering the Illinois gubernatorial race, which he did, and he defeated Dwight H. Green in a landslide that year. Principal among his achievements of his term of office were reorganizing the state police, cracking down on illegal gambling, and improving the state highways. Early in 52, while Stevenson was still governor, President Harry Truman suggested that he consider seeking the Democratic nomination for president. Stevenson was reluctant, arguing that he was committed to running for a second term as governor. But despite his protestations, the delegates drafted him and he accepted the nomination at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in a speech that, according to contemporaries, electrified the nation. Stevenson's distinctive speaking style quickly earned him the reputation as an intellectual, which endeared him to many Americans, while at the same time alienating him from others. Incidentally, as an example of Stevenson's wit, during his campaign, one of Stevenson's supporters allegedly told him that he was sure to get the vote of every thinking man in the U.S., to which Stevenson is said to have replied, "Thanks, but I need a majority to win." His Republican opponent was popular World War II hero Dwight Eisenhower, as some of you will remember, and he and his running mate Richard Nixon saw that Stevenson didn't get that majority that he needed, and they won. Stevenson's running mate was John Sparkman of Alabama in that election. And you will remember that Stevenson ran again in 56, this time with Estes Kefauver, and was again defeated by Eisenhower and Nixon by a wide margin. In the 1960 campaign, Stevenson announced that he was not seeking the nomination, but let it be known that he would accept a draft. Therefore, he declined an invitation to give the nominating address for John Kennedy, if he were to get the nomination. This strained relations between those politicians. And in December of 1960, Kennedy offered Stevenson the position of United States Ambassador to the United Nations, but Adlai refused to accept or reject the position until the Secretary of State post was filled, as he and many others thought he was a natural choice for that spot. After Kennedy named Dean Rusk as Secretary of State, then Stevenson accepted the post of UN ambassador, but once he took the appointment, he threw himself wholeheartedly into his responsibilities, serving as the president of the Security Council, advocating arms control and improved relations with the new nations in Africa. In 1961, Stevenson suffered the greatest humiliation of his career. After an attack at the Bay of Pigs in Cuba, Stevenson disputed allegations that the attack was financed and supported by the CIA, claiming instead that the anti-communist forces were supported by wealthy Cuban emigres. When Stevenson learned that he had been misled by the White House and even supplied by CIA forged photographs, he considered resigning, but was convinced not to do so. Luckily so, because in October of 62 then, Stevenson demonstrated his seasoned statesmanship during the Cuban Missile Crisis. pardon me. After the U.S. discovered offensive nuclear weapons in Cuba, Stevenson confronted Soviet Ambassador Valerian Zorin in an emergency meeting of the Security Council, challenging him to admit that the offensive weapons had been placed in Cuba and declaring that he was prepared to wait until hell freezes over for Zorin's answer. So what about Adlai Stevenson's personal beliefs? In 1954, as part of a This I Believe series with the Chicago American newspaper series, he wrote the following. "As an American, I believe in generosity, in liberty, in the rights of man. These are social and political faiths that are part of me, as they are, I suppose, part of all of us. Such beliefs are easy to express, but part of me too is my religion, my relation to life, and that is not easy to talk about. Religious experience is highly intimate. And for me, at least, ready words are not at hand. I am profoundly aware of the magnitude of the universe, that all is ruled by law, including my finite person. I believe in the infinite wisdom that envelops and embraces me, and from which I take direction, purpose, and strength. First to my mind springs these words of the 27th Psalm, my favorite. For in the time of trouble, the Lord shall hide me in his pavilion. He shall set me upon a rock. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Yes, I believe in and have experienced his goodness in the land of the living, and I have found no rocks of certainty or safety but his. And if doing is part of believing, I find a great design in the simple counsel of the old prophet Micah, to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. In 1958, Stevenson wrote to a friend declining an invitation to a workshop of the Unitarian Fellowship for Social Justice with these words, "I think that one of our most important tasks as Unitarians is to convince ourselves and others that there is nothing to fear in difference, that difference, in fact, is one of the healthiest and most invigorating of human characteristics, without which life would become lifeless. Here lies the power of the liberal way, not in making the whole world Unitarian, but in helping ourselves and others to see some of the possibilities inherent in viewpoints other than one's own, in encouraging free interchange of ideas, in welcoming fresh approaches to the problems of life, in urging the fullest, most vigorous use of critical self-examination. Thus we can learn to grow together, to unite in our common search for the truth beneath a better and happier world." Dana McLean Greeley, president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, in his eulogy of Adlai Stevenson in 1965, said he was not just an American or only a Democrat, or exclusively a Unitarian, or solely an ambassador. He was also a universal citizen. Stevenson was buried in Evergreen Memorial Cemetery in Bloomington, where every year Friends of the United Nations gather at his graveside, the headstone of which is in the shape of the United Nations building, to honor the memory of this eloquent lifetime advocate of world peace. Let's sing hymn number 318 too. Please stand as you're able. Thank you. The blessings of truth be upon us, the power of love direct us and sustain us, and may the peace of this community preserve our going out and our coming in from this time forth until we meet again.